Father Gustavo Gutierrez serves a humble parish in Lima, Peru. A parish that consists mostly of the poor who live in shanty towns where dirt roads double as sewers, where people go hungry at dinner. As their priest, Gustavo hands out alms and tries to organize the people to fight for a better life. Gutierrez is also a world-renowned theologian, the founder of Latin American liberation theology. And I had the good fortune one summer of studying with Gutierrez after I had returned home from working in Guatemala. I thought the class would help me integrate my experience there back into my life here in America. One day during class, a student asked Gutierrez, he said, "Gustavo, why do you spend so much time traveling the world teaching and writing theology when there's more important work for you to do right there in your own parish, right there with your own people?" Gustavo paused for a moment. "I write and teach," he said, "because a theology that legitimizes the rich and powerful and placates the poor with promises of glory in the afterlife, this theology is a significant cause of the suffering of my people. I spend time writing and teaching theology because in Latin America," he said, "in Latin America, theology is about who lives and who dies." His words struck me that day. But for many years, I believed that theology could be a matter of life and death only in a place like Latin America, only where oppression was so great and the church was so powerful. Only there, I thought, could people's ideas about God actually make a difference between life and death. 9/11 changed all that for me. Now it is abundantly clear that no matter where we live, our religious beliefs and how we act on those beliefs is indeed a matter of life and death. During the Holocaust, Jews in concentration camps put God on trial. They literally got together in the prisons and held court-like proceedings, putting God on the stand. "How could you?" they asked. "You, the God of Abraham and Moses, who led us out of slavery, who parted the Red Sea, you who led us to the Promised Land, how could you let this happen? What do you have to say for yourself?" They put God on trial, and in the end, some found God guilty of betrayal. Others acquitted him on grounds that God wasn't as powerful as he had once been in biblical times, so he couldn't be held responsible anymore. And others, looking around and watching their loved ones march off to the gas chambers, could come to no other conclusion than that God must be dead. Today, it is not so much God that needs to be put on trial. It is the people who talk about God. The ministers, the priests, the rabbis and imams, the believers of all stripes who claim to speak and act on behalf of God, it is time for them, for us, to make an accounting, to answer for ourselves, for too much evil has been perpetrated in the name of God for us to be able to go on unchallenged now. We must answer for ourselves. Will ours be a faith of death or of life? Will ours be a theology of oppression or liberation? Will ours be a religion of terror or of peace? And so it is in this context today that I want to make the case for our faith, for Unitarian Universalism. I want to share with you the elements of our faith that I believe are central and say a little bit about why I hold them more dearly now than ever before. And as I do this, I invite as my dialogue partner a great 20th century Unitarian theologian, James Luther Adams. Adams once wrote a famous essay called "The Smooth Stones of Liberal Religion." He said, "The liberal religious tradition is in which we stand is like an ever-flowing stream. Our belief is always moving, always changing, always rushing forth to meet new ideas and new circumstances, never collecting in stagnant pools. So one of the most salient characteristics of our faith is that it changes. But though the water is swiftly moving," he said, "at the bottom of the river of our faith, we find ancient stones worn smooth from the passage of water and time and sand. These stones are what's permanent about our faith. These are the principles that endure. What are the smooth stones of Unitarian Universalism? First, revelation is ongoing. You know, one of the features that distinguishes us liberals from our Orthodox brothers and sisters is that we don't have a creed, a statement of faith that goes back centuries to which all must subscribe. And our detractors would suggest that this is because we can't make up our minds what to believe. But Adams reminds us that no, it's because we believe that truth, wisdom, and religious insight flow constantly into the world. They are just waiting to reveal themselves to us if only we would pay attention. We, more than any other religious tradition, place a premium on the direct experience of this ongoing revelation. You know, the Orthodox teach that all we need to know about God and truth can be found in the Holy Book, whether it's the Bible or the Torah or the Quran. They say that the only true prophet was the Great One, Jesus or Moses or Muhammad. Through these books and prophets, they say, God spoke and speaks no more. To this, the religious liberal says, God speaks still. God is not dead. Revelation is ongoing. And unless we wake up and pay attention to it, we're not going to find the wisdom that we need to survive together on this planet. Some of us in church are studying Emerson together, and the other night we were talking about this notion of ongoing revelation when one person said, "You know, I finally get it. To say that God spoke only to one people at one time centuries ago is as absurd as saying that God only speaks English. How could you limit God like that?" to the fundamentalists who find in their holy book the blueprint for war, to those who discover in the prejudices of ancient peoples legitimization of oppression today, to these people, the religious liberal says, close your holy book and open your heart. Close the book and open your heart. And there, listen for the word of God. This tenet of our faith places a daunting freedom and an incredible responsibility on Unitarian Universalists. You know, it's much easier to say on one hand, well, I'll believe whatever the church tells me to believe. Or on the other hand, well, it doesn't really matter what I believe. But every religion requires of its members a spiritual discipline. And the spiritual discipline of every single Unitarian Universalist is this: not to believe whatever we want, not to believe what we're taught, but to believe what we must, to believe what our conscience demands of us. That is our spiritual discipline as religious liberals. This isn't easy, but to struggle together with these ultimate questions is one of the most rewarding journeys that life offers us. So the first smooth stone, revelation, is ongoing. The second smooth stone of our faith, the second truth shaped by time, is the belief that people of faith have a moral obligation to work to establish a just and a loving world. And we are by no means alone in this belief, but historically, Unitarians have always put more stock in deeds than in creeds. This was the most important stone for James Luther Adams. And knowing a little of his history will help you understand why. When Adams was a young man, he traveled to Nazi Germany to track down a former professor of his who had gone underground to resist Hitler. In Germany, Adams found two churches. The first was the small underground church of the resistance, those believers who worked to usher Jews to freedom and plotted Hitler's overthrow. And the other church, the vast majority of Germans who failed to stand up to Hitler. What they did was they turned their religion inward, insisting that faith was a private affair, that it was about the salvation of their own soul and not the world. And they turned a blind eye to Hitler. In Germany, Adams saw the best and the worst that religion could be, and when he returned, he wrote this: a faith that is not the sister of justice is bound to bring us grief. Faith that is not the sister of justice is bound to bring us grief. Though Adams himself possessed a deep spiritual life, he distrusted religion that was only about spirituality. A purely spiritual religion, he said, is a purely spurious religion. In other words, spirituality without justice is a sham. And he added, justice won't happen simply through our prayers and our fretting. Unitarian Universalists, said Adams, deny the Immaculate Conception of virtue. The birth of justice will take real labor pains, as well as the attendant blood, sweat, and tears. Every religion asks of its members a sacrifice. Gandhi said, "Religion without sacrifice is a sin." Well, our sacrifice has always been to labor for institutions that make good incarnate in the world. The second smooth stone. Number three, are you? I'm going to add it today, and it is this. Throughout history, Unitarian Universalists have upheld two things at the same time, both the inviolability of the human being and the indivisibility of the human family. In other words, the human being is sacred and the human family is one. Emerging from the Reformation, both Unitarianism and Universalism challenged the central tenet of Calvinist faith, the doctrine of human depravity. Instead, they claimed the ancient and oft-forgotten belief that in the face of every human being could be found the image of God. That we each contain a spark of the divine, and that because of our divine parentage, we all possess worth and dignity. To this day, this faith is the ethical rock of Unitarian Universalism. It's the reason that Unitarian Universalists have in this country been in the forefront of many struggles for civil rights, the inherent worth and dignity of the individual. But alongside this belief in the worth of every human being, and sometimes in tension with it, is our faith that the human family is one. You see, throughout history, there's been a pernicious tendency in religion to divide the human family, to separate the chosen from the forgotten, the saved from the damned, the wheat from the chaff. And for some reason, that religious impulse has always gotten more play in history. I think it has something to do with the fact that an us versus them ideology is more useful for those who seek political power and gain in the world. But resisting all along, there has been a far more generous, a far more noble religious impulse. The belief that the human family is indivisible, that we are one. It doesn't mean that we're all alike. It doesn't mean that we're all going to get along. But that at some fundamental level, we are one people. Friends, it's written on the cover of our bulletin. Every Sunday, the words of American Unitarian founder William Ellery Channing, "I am a living member of the great family of all souls, not some." In today's world, friends, where religion is tearing the human family apart and where individual lives are seen as expendable pawns in God's holy war, we need to assert even more strongly our faith in the inviolability of the human being and the indivisibility of the human family. Fourth and finally, I want to speak about hope. Every religion worth its salt gives the people some hope. We live in a broken and suffering world, and we are broken and suffering people. We need hope, not false hope, real hope. While all religions offer hope, it makes a difference where the hope lies. Where is its horizon? Some faiths place the horizon of hope far out in another world, far beyond the world that we know, far beyond the bounds of space and time. For them, this world is irredeemable. It's a lost cause. The horizon of hope for religious liberals is and always has been this world. You know, we sing the song often, "Over my head there is justice, there's peace, there's freedom in the air." But even though these ideals may be over our heads, our faith is that they are not outside of our reach. And that we can pull freedom and justice and peace down out of the sky and make them real here on earth. Ours is a faith in this world. Now you may say, "Rob, the signs of the times do not offer much hope these days." And you're right. But the kind of hope I'm talking about isn't about the short term, it's about the long term. It's about a trust that the universe is on the side of love and compassion, and that we, working together with that creative and transforming principle at the heart of the universe, can help make it so. This gives our lives meaning and purpose. It is this hope, this faith, that keeps us in the struggle when all of the small defeats might lead us to despair. Dr. King summed up this hope best when he said, "The arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. It bends towards justice." They used to call James Luther Adams the smiling prophet. I think that sums up this last smooth stone well. You see, Adams worked tirelessly for justice. He was an old lefty organizer from Chicago. He celebrated many victories and suffered many defeats, but the smile on his face indicated that he knew he was working in concert with the ultimate purpose of the universe. And he knew that one day the cause of justice would prevail. That's where his smile came from. My experience in this work suggests to me that if the prophet doesn't smile, if she has no hope, she won't be a prophet for very long. So friends, to sum up, Unitarian Universalism holds that revelation is ongoing. Therefore, our spiritual discipline is to discern the saving revelation for our time. We believe that religion without justice is false, and therefore the sacrifice demanded of us is to work for the incarnation of good in our world. Third, in spite of all attempts to denigrate life and divide humanity, we believe that human life is sacred and that the human family is one. And finally, our faith is that in some small way, because of our efforts, the world will one day be the place dreamed of by the prophets of old, where justice rolls down like water and peace like a mighty stream. May it be so. Amen.